Hello and welcome to the Food Podcast, a show where personal stories are shared through the lens of food and music and puddings and people. I'm Lindsay Cameron Wilson. We're back to regular programming after a little pause in this season. Based on this episode, you might think that all I've been doing during our time apart is eating cake. I mean, pudding. The semantics get confusing. Let me explain. The word pudding means different things to different people. For those growing up in North America, pudding means a creamy dessert, either made from scratch, starting with a custard cooked in a double boiler and thickened with egg yolks, flour, or cornstarch, and flavored with chocolate or caramel, or maybe a fruit like strawberries, and left to set in the fridge in a big bowl, or on special occasions, in individual cups, like champagne coupes. But most people in the last 50 years or so made puddings from a powdered mix that came in a box, made by brands like Jell-O. Jell-O pudding was part of my childhood. Well, not mine exactly. But there were always lucky kids in my elementary school classes who would have Jell-O pudding cups in their lunchboxes. Those little cups were the same size as a McDonald's chocolate fudge sundae. They would eat them slowly, scooping around the edges, leaving a mound in the middle, while I ate my homemade oatmeal cookie. Anyway, everywhere else, the word pudding isn't quite so specific. A culinary dictionary would say that pudding is a term for a sweet or savory food cooked in a casing, like a sausage stuffed into pig intestines, or a cake steamed or boiled in cloth. Some puddings are baked, like rice pudding, or steamed in a decorative mold, or in a pudding bowl. And sometimes these bowls can fit perfectly on a child's head, becoming a tool, a guide for cutting hair. I don't think my mom used a bowl on me. She was able to create the bowl shape all on her own. I'll put a link in the show notes to prove this. In England, for some, the word pudding is a dessert course, as in, what's for pudding? But it's also the dish itself, like plum pudding, which is always soft, homey, and eaten with a spoon. But pudding is also called dessert in some circles, and is formal, the kind you eat with a fork. Puddings are also savory, like Yorkshire pudding, blood pudding, the sausage made with pig's blood, steel-cut oats, suet, onions, and a pinch of allspice. And that's just England. I have a stack of old cookbooks in front of me, passed down by my mother-in-law, Rose. They were her mother's, and before that, her mother's mother. Rose's mother, Evelyn, moved to England from Canada in the 1930s, married an Englishman, and during World War II, they had Rose. Rose says her mother was a good cook, even during the rationing years after the war. One of Evelyn's books is a small hardback, covered at home in green checkerboard paper, titled Ida Bailey Allen's Cookbook, published in 1948. In a section on how to steam puddings, the instructions suggest using a steamer that comes for that purpose, or a pressure cooker, or what sounds like an improvised pressure cooker consisting of a utensil of suitable size for the pudding, a lid, a piece of adhesive tape to seal the lid, and a big kettle and a newspaper to insulate the pudding, with instructions to replenish boiling water hourly until pudding is ready. And then there's the Consolidated Library of Modern Cooking, published in 1904, where 12 pages are devoted to puddings, all sweet, some baked, some boiled, some steamed, in a moderate oven. Recipes like suet pudding, gooseberry pudding, rum pudding, steamed graham pudding, cracker raisin pudding, huckleberry pudding, chocolate pudding, red custard. Evelyn didn't make notes in these books, except for a torn recipe tucked between the pudding pages in Mrs. Beaton's cookery book. The recipe is written in black fountain pen, large and confident, but the recipe doesn't have a title, just instructions that sound like a lovely, simple, unleavened bread. Mix a good pinch of salt with half a pound of flour and 2 ounces of lard or butter. Stir in 1 cup of granulated sugar and form a dough with a well-beaten egg. Add a little milk if necessary. It should be a dough which will roll easily without being at all sticky. Bake about 20 minutes on a greased tin in a moderate oven. Mrs. Beaton was British. Her first book of household management was published in 1861. Evelyn must have acquired this book after leaving her complicated family life in Canada to start a new one in England. I wonder, what were the sounds in her kitchen? Was there music in her home? And what stories or secrets did she steam or bake or boil into her puddings? This brings me to a dessert, I mean a pudding, that holds a story. I ate it for the first time on a cozy night this past winter at Field Guide, a little spot downtown with a small menu cooked entirely on a 4-ringed white enamel stove. Incredible flavors come from that stove. Braised fennel with chimichurri, cauliflower tacos, trout in a curry broth, and for dessert, malva pudding. We ordered it on a whim. The chat was swirling around us, and the candle on our table was glowing, setting the stage for something unknown. A thick cake arrived, topped with a soft dollop of whipped cream, a few orange slices, and ginger crunchy bits. The cake itself looked thick and nondescript, but oh no, it was dense and moist and full of flavor. Was it cognac? A fruit of some sort? And the texture was almost wet, like it was holding something, something sweet, something weighty. I'd file malva pudding under a dessert. Baked, but moist, so there must have been steam involved. And it could be eaten with a fork or a spoon. Where was this pudding from? The name says it's not from here. I went back twice over the past few months for more. And then I found a recipe and made it myself. Malva pudding is a South African pudding cake brought by Dutch colonists in the 1600s. The word malva is Afrikaans for marshmallow. Malva pudding is so spongy and marshmallowy. And now I know why. The recipe is a basic sponge of flour, egg, salt, sugar, and baking soda, and a little vinegar. If anyone has made a paper mache volcano in their youth, we all know that vinegar and baking soda mixed together will make the perfect eruption. A minor eruption takes place when making this batter, which gives the cake its spongy, marshmallowy texture. And then there's the addition of apricot jam. Apricots are a flavor of that place. But the best part is the sweet, creamy sauce that is poured over the pudding as soon as it comes out of the oven. It feels like you're drenching the cake, but somehow the cake soaks it all up and holds it inside. It's magical. I found the recipe for malva pudding on my shelf in the kitchen, in a cookbook given to me by a friend. The book is called Monkey Weddings and Summer Sapphires, written by Colleen Thompson, a South African woman who's been living in Halifax for almost 20 years. Monkey weddings is a South African phrase, meaning a sun shower. Summer sapphires refer to blueberries, the gem-like berries that grow wild here in Nova Scotia on low, scrubby bushes, with leaves that turn crimson through the fall and hang on through the winter. The title says it all, a woman who straddles these two places through the lens of weather and food. Her recipe for malva pudding is in the chapter called Cold Comfort. The chapter begins with Colleen meandering through Bear River, a Nova Scotian community that sits on the head of the tidewaters of Bear River. Artists live there, innovators, Americans who fled the Vietnam draft in the 1960s. And like so often with people who are from away, Colleen is the explorer, the one who reminds you of the places in your province, the places you had forgotten about.
We have slipped inside a cozy cafe and art gallery from out of the chilly weather, slurping soup and dunking freshly baked biscuits. Undel Devidremo, the moving Madame Butterfly aria, is playing softly in the background. Anne Stanley was my painting teacher when I was a college art student in Johannesburg. She was an eccentric 5-foot-tall firecracker who wore little round gold-framed glasses, her long silver hair in pigtails, and paint-splattered overalls. The painting studio in the bowels of an old dilapidated building on Saratoga Avenue in Heelbrow should have been declared derelict long before it actually was. But Anne could make us show up for every class, despite the bleak, musty, windowless space. Treating us like one of her own, she was always concerned for our well-being. If we weren't eating correctly, we were not painting at our best, and so she would bring in large pots of homemade soup and crusty baguettes, insisting we all eat before starting to paint. She taught me much more than how to paint. I never was a particularly skilled painter, but instead she taught me to pay close attention to the spaces between things, explaining that only once I could see them could I see the real picture. She introduced us to the world of opera. Madame Butterfly and La Traviata would be blasted from a boombox as she encouraged us to be inspired by the music and feel it pump through our bodies as we painted. On cold winter mornings, she would arrive at the studio with one of the prostitutes from nearby Box Street, invited to join us for soup and opera, and who would invariably end up being our life model for the day. On Fridays, for entertainment, she would read out the Government Gazette's banned list of the week, spanning all kinds of stuff, books, music, movies, whatever the government deemed unfit and anti-apartheid. The song Sugar Man by Rodriguez was banned because they thought it incited drug use. Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall because it encouraged black youth to rise up against the education system. Stevie Wonder, Christa Berg, Peter Gabriel, all banned. To Kill a Mockingbird and A Clockwork Orange and everything written by South African authors André Brink and Breiten Breitenbach made the list. All forbid. The list went on and on. Between those grey studio walls, I learned to think, question, and seek things out for myself. I learned that creativity is ignited by books and music and connection, and that soup and opera always bring comfort from the cold.
And I think she would add malva pudding to that list. Malva pudding is filed in the cold comfort chapter. In the head note, she calls it comfort personified. So I made her version of malva pudding. I had apricot jam in the fridge and found a special bottle of cognac in the cupboard that I added to the sauce. It was a nod to Field Guide. And I poured the sweet sauce over the pudding and watched as it disappeared into the cake. Colleen Thompson lives in Halifax, not too far from my home. She is a food writer for several publications, both here and in the States. And she is a photographer too, and a hiker, an outdoors person. She's acclimatized to this place. She has a good winter coat, and she can see the beauty through adversity. We have mutual friends in common, so she wasn't too weirded out, I hope, when I asked her if she wanted to go to Field Guide with me for a piece of malva pudding. I wanted to meet her to talk about life and food and her art teacher and see what we could find in the spaces between things. That would have been my third time having malva pudding at Field Guide. It was Colleen who discovered the chef was from South Africa. She heard his voice and her ears perked up. He came over to our table and told us he came to Nova Scotia to help take care of his Canadian grandmother. It was early March at the time, still very much winter. As we chatted, every so often he would stare outside at the bare trees and the crusts of gray snow lining the buildings across the street, Colleen told him that yes, the winters are long, but he would be rewarded with a stunning summer if he could hang in there. It takes time, she said, and appropriate clothing. So this is why he put his family's recipe on the menu, a touchstone, a memory of sorts, something with apricots and ginger too. Not traditional, but his family's version of malva pudding. And it's so good, I want to paint it. I've been painting lately with watercolors, usually as a form of procrastination when I should be writing, so the stakes are low. I paint what's in front of me, flowers in a vase, sometimes they're dying, or an apple, or banana, or a branch with pussy willows. It's fun, and it's hard, and it's an exercise in seeing what will happen when watery colors hit the paper. I have never painted cake before, especially not a brown cake, where all the details are deep inside. I wonder how I could capture its story. Colleen and I are the same age, more or less. Before she left South Africa for Canada, she worked as a music journalist. Her cookbook is layered with these details of a life lived during apartheid, of music, of food, of art and writing. It was politically very different to my early 20s in Canada, of course, but so much was the same. At the beginning of the cookbook, Colleen has a list of 32 songs. Because, as she writes, music, like food, has the ability to shape us. Some songs describe the longings, the passions, the small details we would otherwise miss. There are songs like Fumbling Towards Ecstasy by Sarah McLachlan and Landslide by Stevie Nicks, Sugar Man by Rodriguez, and Wicked Game by Chris Isaak.
My friend Iris and I would meet every Thursday for lunch at our usual spot in Johannesburg and compile and refine, usually over peri-peri calamari and glasses of Savvy B, our list of 32 songs. We figured that 32 songs defined the soundtrack to life at any given moment in time. One of the songs that made both of our lists was Sarah McLachlan's Fumbling Towards Ecstasy. In 1993, when the album by the same title was released, we were both working in the music industry. Iris is an A&R manager for Virgin Records, and me as a writer for Top 40 Music magazine. Iris said the melancholy song reminded her of her childhood in Scotland, and for me, it symbolized my first break as a music journalist, as McLachlan was the first big-name artist I had the opportunity to interview. It was during the interview that I learned that she was from Halifax, Nova Scotia, and just how much of an influence it had had on her music and her sense of place.
Sarah McLachlan's album Fumbling Towards Ecstasy was released in 1993. I was in university at the time, studying history, writing papers, working at the campus bar, serving rye and gingers, breaking up with a boyfriend, wearing faded men's Levi's jeans torn at the knee. Soon that album became an anthem of the time, a melancholy backdrop to our lives, and it would stay that way for years, even in Johannesburg. Colleen just shared a new playlist of 32 songs with me. A list that defines her now, and she's invited me to do the same. Sugar Man's still on that list, and Fumbling Towards Ecstasy. But songs like Leon Bridges' River is new, and my favorite, Florence and the Machine's Dog Days Are Over.
I met this girl, she was walking through one of my dreams. She kissed my eyes and but she said, made so much sense to me.
While I think about what my 32 songs will be, I'm going to take out my paints, preheat the oven, and turn on Rose Cousins, Jill Barber, and Jen Grant's cover of Blue Rodeo's Dark Angel. If you watch this performance, you'll see that Jill Barber leans in, her body pulsing, and Jen Grant keeps a gentle beat with her hand, and Rose Cousins closes her eyes. I want to mimic that art room back in Johannesburg, with Colleen's art teacher, Anne Stanley, encouraging me to feel the music through my body as I paint and while I eat, and then I'll probably make a pudding. Thank you to Colleen Thompson for going on a blind date with me. And thank you to Field Guide for introducing me to something new. I'll put details from the episode and a recipe for malva pudding in the show notes. And consider signing up for my newsletter, where I'll share news from the podcast and weekly food stories that will arrive in your inbox every Friday night. You can sign up at lindsaycameronwilson.ca. This series is edited by Abby Circatella. Our theme song, One More Night, is by Jen Grant. If you'd like to support the show, please rate and review the food podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. I'm Lindsay Cameron Wilson.